Monday, the 31st of August, and the last morning of the month. 2 days of reading to catch up on, because Sunday is dark, and the weekend does not stop producing. Top off your cup. What struck me going through it is that almost nothing this morning came out of a laboratory. The pressure is arriving from somewhere else entirely, and I want to walk you through where. First up, over July and August, Washington pulled 2 separate levers on foreign-made robotics, and the second one landed properly this weekend. The Federal Communications Commission has extended what it calls its covered list to include foreign-made advanced robotic systems, and separately, steep tariffs have been imposed on imported drones and drone components. The drone tariffs take effect in September. A second tranche, covering additional components, follows in 2027. Both actions are justified on national security grounds. The covered list is worth understanding because its trajectory is the story. It was created in 2021 as a telecommunications instrument aimed at network equipment and surveillance gear from a handful of named manufacturers. It was then extended to cover foreign-made drones. It has now been widened again to reach advanced robotic devices. That is a complete change of purpose. An instrument built to keep untrusted hardware off communications networks is now shaping which robots can be bought and deployed. The market being fenced is one where Chinese manufacturers already hold commanding positions. The commercial drone segment is dominated by them almost entirely, and Chinese humanoid programs have been shipping at price points that American and European competitors have struggled to approach. Tariffs and procurement exclusion raise the landed cost of those systems inside the American market. They do not change the manufacturing base, the component supply chains, or the volume of field data that the incumbent producers accumulate. That last point is the one I keep turning over, and it is the part that matters if you are tracking robot learning rather than robot trade. In embodied artificial intelligence, deployment volume sits directly upstream of the data that trains the next generation of policies. Every hour a fleet spends in the world is an hour of interaction data, but restricting the highest volume production line in the category from the American market means a smaller, more expensive domestic fleet. Accumulating fewer operational hours, feeding less data back into the models. The near-term picture is a market that splits in two. A protected segment with higher prices and lower unit counts, and a global segment where the incumbent platforms keep scaling. The component tariffs arriving in 2027 extend the same pressure down into actuators, sensors, and airframes, which is where the cost structure of any domestic alternative gets set. That is the part I would watch. A tariff on finished drones can be answered by assembling domestically. A tariff on the harmonic drives, the brushless motors, and the depth sensors underneath them cannot. At least not quickly, because the qualified suppliers for those parts are concentrated in the same place the finished goods are. Moving on to our second story, and it is the first time a particular set of legal obligations has been enforced rather than described. On the 29th of August, Henna Verkkunen confirmed the step. She is the European Commission's Executive Vice President for Tech Sovereignty, Security, and Democracy. And she said the European Union's Artificial Intelligence Office has formally sent requests for information to a set of providers of general-purpose artificial intelligence models based in several different regions of the world. Reporting from Euractiv identifies the recipients as leading frontier laboratories, said to include OpenAI, Anthropic, and Google. The date is the substance here. Obligations on providers of general-purpose models became enforceable on the 2nd of August. The requests followed within 4 weeks. Now, a request for information is the lowest rung on the ladder. It is an information-gathering instrument. It is not a finding of breach, and it carries no penalty. But it is the rung from which the rest of the ladder gets climbed, and it establishes that the Artificial Intelligence Office intends to exercise the supervisory powers it was given, rather than rely on the voluntary code of practice that has governed the space so far. The three subject areas are where this gets substantive, because they map precisely onto the obligations with the least settled practice behind them. The first is model security, protecting weights and the integrity of the training and serving pipeline. The second is independent external evaluation, which has generated more argument between laboratories and regulators than anything else in the text, because it requires providers to submit systems to assessors they do not control, and because there is still no accreditation regime saying who those assessors are. The third is post-market monitoring, tracking how a model behaves after release and reporting serious incidents. That third one has a practical edge that is easy to miss. Most providers built their telemetry and their incident classification for their own purposes, to debug and to improve. Being asked to produce it for a regulator with statutory information gathering powers is a different exercise. Internal evaluation artifacts, written for a research audience, now have a second reader, and the documentation burden shifts away from model cards and toward auditable process records. The other thing worth watching is scope. The general purpose obligations attach above a compute threshold and carry partial exemptions for models released under free and open source licenses, and how those lines get drawn in this first contact will shape what European deployment of open weight models looks like. Responses are not public, so the next visible signal is whether the office escalates, issues guidance, or closes the requests quietly. Third up, and staying with external pressure, though from a courtroom this time, late on Friday, Sony Music Publishing, Warner Chappell, and a group of additional music publishers filed suit in the United States District Court for the Northern District of California against Anthropic and, unusually, against co-founders Dario Amodei and Benjamin Mann as named individual defendants. The complaint alleges a campaign of illegally torrenting, scraping, and downloading copyrighted works, and characterizes the use of those works to train Claude as theft. Music Business Worldwide reported the filing first. An Anthropic spokesperson said the company disagrees with the publisher's claims and intends to defend itself in court. The legally significant thing here is a shift in what is being attacked. Earlier, music industry litigation against the same company centered on outputs, whether a model reproducing lyrics constitutes infringement. In that framing, the fair use analysis turns on transformation and market substitution at the moment of generation. This complaint targets acquisition instead. How was the corpus obtained? Was it torrented? And is that downloading infringement in its own right, independent of anything the model later produced? That distinction has already proved decisive across the broader wave of training data cases. Courts have repeatedly treated the legality of the copying that builds a data set as separable from the legality of the model trained on it, and the acquisition channel, whether licensed, scraped, or torrented, has driven outcomes more than the training step itself has. Naming the founders individually is the other notable element. Corporate veil questions rarely surface this early in technology litigation, and individual liability claims expand the set of custodians whose communications about data sourcing become discoverable. Whether those claims survive a motion to dismiss is a separate question from whether they shape the early phase of the case. In practice, they usually do the latter, regardless of the former. There is a second-order effect worth naming, which is what this does to the shape of a pre-training corpus. If the legal exposure attaches to how the data was obtained, rather than to what the model does with it, then the cheapest defensive move is not to train differently. It is to keep a record, provenance manifests, license attestations, retention of the acquisition logs, the ability to say for any given shard where it came from and under what terms. None of that improves a model. All of it costs engineering time and storage, and it has to be built into the pipeline from the beginning, because reconstructing provenance after the fact for a corpus of that size is close to impossible. The laboratories that started keeping those records early are about to find out that it was the most valuable, unglamorous decision they made. The broader effect is that training data provenance is being converted, case by case, from an engineering footnote into a documented, auditable property of a model. A laboratory that can demonstrate a lawfully acquired corpus is in a materially different position from one that cannot, and the cost of that demonstration now feeds directly into pre-training strategy. And for our fourth and final story today, the constraint stops being legal and becomes metallurgical. The information reported on Saturday that SpaceX has been laying the groundwork for a turbine blade and vane foundry at its site in Bastrop, Texas. The evidence was job listings that name a blades and vanes foundry explicitly, alongside due diligence work showing the company acquired roughly 830 acres near its existing Starlink factory between March and June. Elon Musk confirmed the purpose the same day. He wrote that while SpaceX and Tesla are each building 100 gigawatts a year of solar production capacity as fast as they can, natural gas will still be needed to supplement and bootstrap solar for several years. The limiting factor on gas turbine production, he said, is casting the blades and vanes. That claim is broadly correct, and it is the technically interesting part. Turbine hot section components are single crystal or directionally solidified nickel superalloy castings with internal cooling passages, produced by investment casting in a small number of qualified foundries worldwide. Yield rates are low, qualification cycles are long, the capacity is not elastic. That is why the lead time on a new heavy-duty gas turbine has stretched to multiple years, while demand for firm power has grown at a rate the turbine supply chain was never sized for. Vertically integrating the casting step is a plausible response if the constraint is genuinely metallurgical capacity rather than order book prioritization, though it is a substantial departure from anything the company has manufactured before, and superalloy casting is not obviously adjacent to rocket engine production just because both involve hot metal. A follow-up reporting added the emissions dimension, routing more data center load onto on-site gas generation, moves the output from the grid to the site, and the permitting and air quality consequences of that shift are being litigated in several jurisdictions where behind-the-meter gas has been deployed to serve compute. The signal I would take from this, if you are modeling compute growth, is how far the binding constraint has migrated. It was accelerator supply. Then, it was high bandwidth memory. Then, it was grid interconnection queues. This weekend, it is the casting furnaces that make the blades for the turbines that make the power. Each of those migrations has shortened the list of parties who can add capacity at all, and a launch company integrating backwards into a metallurgical process is a fairly direct measure of how deep that pressure now reaches. So here is what this morning was actually about. Not one of those four stories came out of a research laboratory, a trade instrument, a regulator, a courtroom, and a casting furnace. Every one of them is now a real term in what gets built and how fast. We spend most of our attention on capability, on the benchmarks and the architectures, and this weekend, the interesting variables were all sitting outside the model. There are 118 items in the full digest, including a neat result proving that optimal key value cache eviction is computationally hard, which is a satisfying thing to know about a problem everyone has been solving with heuristics. Have a good start to your week, and I will see you tomorrow.